So we're going to go over a bit of an overview of modern web standards, different JavaScript libraries you can use. Actually, I was just having a great conversation with Steve, wherever Steve's over there, about some of these different things like Knockout.js and Ember and Handlebars and all these different frameworks that you have to facilitate creating, you know, two-way bindings and declarations on your client side. We're going to get onto all that. And we're going to actually build out the Geek Quiz front end. So what I'm going to demo today is actually showing you some of the fundamentals of these frameworks, and then we'll get into the more traditional copy and paste a large amount of code and actually explain how that works now that you have a bit of an understanding of it. So for those of you who are doing web development, hopefully you're doing it with HTML5, and hopefully you're doing it with CSS3, because, you know, it's the old jazz hands, you know, those two things together creates magic, and it's really true. If you take a look at a lot of the modern applications that are being developed right now, what you can actually achieve by using HTML5 and what you can do with CSS3 is truly amazing. It's incredibly powerful, it's incredibly feature-rich, and it's incredibly well-supported. And I'm a big believer in a mobile-first and a web-first strategy that carries over to all the other devices. So let's talk a little bit about HTML5 itself, and what is HTML5? It's really kind of a blanket term, or an umbrella term, as the slide here says, to kind of say what's next, because HTML5 actually isn't finished. It's actually still in the process of being defined. And you'll see that there's a number of aspects of the specification that have now been finalized, and there's still a number that are still being worked on. And this is why you're seeing kind of a resurgence of vendor-specific browser extensions, the Dash Mozes, Dash WebKit, Dash MS, or Dash IE. And that's because we're trying to keep up with the specification. And it's really what's next for HTML, what's next for CSS, and what's next for ECMAScript. Kind of really important and near and dear to me is it's not an annoying marketing term. It's not a buzzword. It's not Web 2.0. This is a legitimate thing. This is very, very important that we all embrace this, because this really is the future of the web. And finally, it's a language that's actually being supported on a number of devices, not just the things you're thinking about. It's not just, you know, tablets and phones and desktop computers and those traditional browsers. It's on embedded systems now. It's on your TV. It's eventually going to be on your toaster even. So, you know, by leveraging your knowledge of web development and by leveraging the latest standards, you're actually going to be able to build the next generation of applications on a host of different devices. So again, why do you care? Browsers have become incredibly powerful. Not just browsers themselves, but the kind of major components of the browser, the rendering engines, the JavaScript engines, and the fact that you can take those engines and apply them into other applications, not just browsers. The fact that you can actually target different devices. You can do native development, for example, on Windows 8. You can take an HTML5 app and create a native app on Windows 8 that can actually access the exact same APIs as you were doing C++ or C#. But these standards, and the fact that all of the major browser vendors out there are adhering to these standards, is that you can now target for features. Now, if any of you in this room are still doing user agent sniffing or browser tag sniffing to determine what view to show somebody or what feature set they should get, please stop. Don't do that anymore. It sucks. Especially for those of us who run Internet Explorer, because you're still kind of going, oh, it's IE, let me just give you this crappy old view. That doesn't work anymore. IE6 is dead. Let's move on. But no, you really should be detecting for features. And the reason for this is we all have a number of devices. I'm just looking around here. I've got a tablet, my laptop, a phone, another tablet. I've got, you know, even more devices in my bag here. Including devices from other vendors. And so if you're doing, you know, so for example, if you're doing user agent detection, I'm going to get a different user experience, and that's going to be a bit jarring. But if I do feature detection, I'm going to get feature parity on all the devices that support those features. So please, 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 long-winded way of saying, check for the feature, not for the browser. So I'm going to quickly just show some really interesting HTML5 demos here. Just some interesting web applications that use HTML5, probably to a further extent than we're probably going to expect from you today. But this is Photosynth, photosynth.net, Microsoft technology for doing really cool, interactive, panoramic photos. Now has a new preview feature. You can actually see it yourself over at photosynth.net/preview, where we can actually take a whole series of images from a video and make it an interactive experience. So we're seeing a fly through here through the glaciers, but and I'm just going to actually touch my monitor here because it's touch input, and I can actually zoom in and out, and I can move it along anywhere I want. So this is using WebGL HTML5 for making this really fun interactive experience. Another great one is hover.ie. If you haven't seen this, this is just a fun little port to kind of prove what you can do. This is an old Windows 3.1.1 game. And I can just go ahead and play this online here. And again, I can use my keyboard or I can use touch input to play a game. Again, through the browser, full WebGL, 3D, light textures, shading, quite good and quite a bit of fun. Another really great game, I was just showcasing this earlier, is a game called Contre Jour, which, again, is a very immersive, rich environment. I'm going to use touch once again to modify the world that I'm in, and I'm not very good at this game. But what you're seeing is, again, in the browser, touch, using HTML5, using WebGL, using SVG, using a number of different technologies for a fun, rich experience. But it's not just about building fun games. You can build, obviously, very feature-rich applications. And you're using them today. You're using Outlook.com, or using Gmail, or using Facebook, or using Twitter, or using Trello. You're using any number of these modern applications. And those are all using HTML5, using responsive web design, and using a number of different aspects of the HTML5 specification. What I'm showing you here is actually Project Monaco. This is Visual Studio as an editor in your browser. And because we're doing feature detection, because we're not just checking for user agents, this is actually a screenshot off a MacBook showing that you can use Visual Studio in your browser on your MacBook to do your coding, and you still have your IntelliSense, you still have your autocomplete. So what exactly is HTML5, and how does this all come together? So you got these two kind of standard bodies, you got these two consortiums working together. You have W3C, and you have ECMA, or ECMA. They're in charge of various aspects of the specification. So W3C kind of takes over all the really web-specific stuff, HTML, CSS, SVG, geolocation. And ECMA works on, well, ECMAScript. So for those of you not familiar with ECMAScript, does anybody know what ECMAScript is? It is JavaScript. JavaScript is the implementation of ECMAScript, the specification. So all the cool stuff you're seeing now, the new APIs available to you in JavaScript and through the new JavaScript engines, is through this new ECMAScript 262 specification. Just to give you an idea, this seems fairly simple and small and easy. There's actually another layer on top of this where HTML specification is broken down into about 80 subspecifications. In fact, there's hundreds of subspecifications. I could do a whole other slide just listing all those out. Just one of these specifications is over 500 pages. Pretty big. Not light reading. Not expecting you to read it. Obviously not expecting you to know all the APIs available in ECMAScript here. See, these are just some of the new APIs as part of the kind of overarching HTML5 specification. So it's a rather large thing. And what I'm getting at here is we often talk about just a few specific parts of HTML5. There's a lot you can do, and there's a lot left that people haven't really explored or leveraged yet. So it's definitely worth kind of spending some time and testing it out and trying it out and seeing what you can build with it. So there's a bunch of tools that we have to kind of help people get going with HTML5 and achieving proper cross-platform, cross-browser compatibility. So one of them is Modern IE. The other one is caniuseit.com and Compatibility Inspector. And I'm going to show you those right now. Let me just jump back over to my demo box here. So this is modern.ie. You can go to it right now. Check it out. What this is going to do, it's going to give you various tools, articles, tips, resources, virtual machine images, as well as an inspector that you can run against your site to see, is it compatible with what versions of IE? It'll make recommendations as to what you can change to make it better. So it's a really fantastic site and resource to determine whether what you're working on is going to have a great experience across Internet Explorer or not. The other one I was talking about was caniuseit.com. This one's great. This one's really, really targeted at looking at specific aspects of the specification and seeing, does this work on a number of browsers? So, for example, I can just zoom in here, and I can search for WebGL. If I zoom out, it'll tell me what WebGL is all about, and then it'll show me this feature table. And I can look across the current versions of all the different browsers and see which ones support WebGL or not, and which ones have indicated they'll have near future support for it or farther future support for it. I can look up, for example, if I'm working on an application and I actually want to do geolocation inside my web app, I can search for geo in here and see that I am pretty much good to go except for Opera, except for Opera Mini on using geo API in my application. And there's a full index here if you just want to like take a look at all the different things that are going on here. And again, this is just to give you an idea of just how big HTML5 really is. Another really cool little bit of code that you can actually put into your own project is called the Compatibility Inspector. And what this is going to do, you need to put this script at the top of your project. And what it's going to do is actually look at all the code that's running, look at your DOM, and make determinations as to how compatible it is. And it'll give you this kind of little summary here across the top. And you can open the inspector, you can verify, you can debug, you can see tips in here, you can see details of the test, you can choose which tests you want to run. So really handy little bit of code that you can use to determine how well your application is going to work in terms of your compatibility. Back here. So a couple of other things that we do to facilitate building with modern standards. Inside of each HTML5-based template that we produce inside Visual Studio, so you know when you go create a new project, we include the modernizer script and CSS resets, normalize.css. What this does is it helps you achieve backwards compatibility. Right? So not all browsers in their previous versions had great support for HTML5. IE was guilty of that in version 8 and below. So what this framework does is basically shims in a lot of the common APIs required by HTML5 applications. And what normalized CSS does is actually alters elements, changes things like paddings and margins and displays and makes them block instead of inline or block inline and so on and so forth. And basically introduces not everything about HTML5, but allows you to get increased backwards compatibility. And this is why a lot of the applications that we're building today, we can say that you know they support many, many versions prior, both in IE and Chrome and Firefox and more. So it's worth looking at Modernizer and normalized CSS to see how all that works. A couple of other things new with HTML5 is the introduction of new markup elements. So we're all guilty of this. I still kind of do it. I'm working on getting better. But basically, we put lots of divs. We style those divs. Maybe the div is actually inline. Maybe the div is block. Maybe the div is block inline. We kind of give it semantic meaning by its class name. So we give it a class header. We give it a class nav to indicate that this is my navigation element. And this works. There's technically nothing wrong with this. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't imply any real meaning to your markup. It doesn't imply any real hierarchy to your markup. And it doesn't help anybody who has accessibility requirements. So what HTML5 has done is it introduced a number of new elements. We're just going to talk about two quick ones here, which is like header navigation. So now, instead of putting a div with a class header, you can just actually create a header element or a nav element. There's footer elements. There's a side elements. There's section elements. There's a bunch of new elements. And in fact, you can create any element you want. Basically, any non-known element tag that you put in, so foo or bar, will be treated like you was just like a div, but you can access it as a known element name. And the reason we do this is for a number of reasons. It's to eliminate this generic tagging, where we just sprinkle divs all over the place. The fact that you can actually search an element by its tag name way faster than you can do it by its class name, and this is across all of the major engines out there. So this actually makes the performance of your application faster. So that's a tip you can actually use right now. So rather than looking up an element by its class name, if you give it an actual tag name, an element name, you can actually do your DOM access much quicker. Probably most importantly to me anyways, something I do care about, is the accessibility. In our push to make all these modern applications, sometimes we forget about accessibility. Sometimes we forget about people who need to use screen readers or who have problems with fine input motor control. So by introducing these new elements, applications can detect them. They can kind of understand the generic markup of your application or the semantic meaning of your application and facilitate these users who actually make up a good number of users of your application and make their experience better. So simply changing the elements that you use doesn't change how it's rendered, but will change the future use of your application and the future of accessibility applications that are going to still to be developed. And this is all because we're standardizing these tags now. So you're going to see more of these introduced. If you go check out the HTML5 specification or any of these tools that I've talked about, you can actually see a full list of those, especially over on caniuse.com. So next we're going to talk about JavaScript libraries. And we could do an entire day on JavaScript libraries. I'm sure if I polled the audience right here, I can probably get about a dozen different JavaScript libraries that people use. But the most popular one would definitely, at least in my opinion, and I think the stats prove it, is jQuery. So just by show of hands and plus ones online to the folks online, who uses jQuery today in their web app? Okay, so you don't need to tell me to tell you just how popular jQuery actually is. The numbers speak for themselves. So why is jQuery so popular? Why am I such a big fan of jQuery? It's ridiculously easy to use. The syntax is easy. The documentation's fantastic. There's loads of plugins to make it even easier where I don't have to write the code myself. Really, actually, in about 5 minutes, you can actually get the fundamentals of jQuery kind of locked in terms of how the CSS selector works, how using the element, wrapping an element in a $ function call converts it to a jQuery object, and then from there I got a whole host of really cool helper methods I can use. So, ridiculously easy to learn, loads of plugins, extends the features, introduces really easy document object model manipulation, animation routines, easy iterators, mapping, and so on and so forth. At its core, as I mentioned, is its powerful DOM selector. That's really what jQuery set out to solve early on in the first versions, was the ability to access, manipulate, and model your DOM very, very easily. It's actually quite lightweight, and both in terms of file size. When it's minified, it's quite small. It doesn't take up a whole lot of bandwidth transferring that back and forth, especially if you use a CDN. So, for example, Microsoft's such a big fan of jQuery. We host current and previous versions of the jQuery script on our content distribution network, and you're welcome to use that in your own applications and leverage our distributed worldwide network to alleviate that. But also it's lightweight in terms of performance overhead. So anytime you're taking a framework and you're putting another framework on top of that framework, so in this case we're putting jQuery on top of JavaScript, you're going to have a bit of a performance hit. But at least in my experience, and especially with the most recent versions of jQuery, it's really nominal. Those of you who have been using jQuery for a long time, there are caveats to that. You can definitely fall yourself into some pitfalls and definitely have some performance problems, but that's actually the code you're writing. You can easily fix those. Common pitfalls there being over-selection of the same element, or converting it to a jQuery object, or too large of a jQuery selector that you're employing, you're adding in. Is there any questions? I think I heard somebody, maybe just a call. Okay, great. And the community support. The community support for jQuery is unbelievable. Just take a look at all these different things. We've got the forums, we've got meetups, we've got community-produced plugins, we've got the API documentation, and we've also got jQuery UI. Anybody here use jQuery UI? Yeah, not quite as popular as jQuery itself. jQuery UI is a framework that sits on top of jQuery. This introduced a host of widgets and controls like date picker, slider, tabs. Also introduces different effects or different actions such as draggable, droppable, sortable. But also introduces a theming framework. Really quite good themes. So there's a lot of base themes that you can use, and then you can extend those out. So as I mentioned, jQuery, it's fundamental. It's about finding something and doing something. It's very functional in the sense that the return type of helper methods is the element or elements that it was working on, so you can chain all your commands together. At its core, it's all about manipulating that DOM, doing your updates, retrieving, moving elements around, changing hierarchy, and so on and so forth, and really about working with events so that you can actually wire up a very interactive application quite easily.
Mark, could you comment on, I read somewhere, and I can't remember where it was, but that jQuery is kind of plateaued, and in fact, it may be dropping a bit because of the advent of Backbone, Angular, Ember, all of these, you know, good frameworks, because jQuery basically just mangles controller and Vue and all that code in one place.
So
right?
the best way to think about jQuery, and my opinion, take it with a large grain of salt, is no, jQuery is not going anywhere. I don't find it even stagnating. So if you think of what jQuery is really about these fundamental DOM manipulations. And in fact, almost all the frameworks that you mentioned use jQuery, or at least have the ability to use jQuery, and they do so by default, including, I believe, Angular, Ember, and Knockout.
Bootstrap does.
And Bootstrap does as well. these add MVC, MVVM, separation of concern, all of that goodness and those design patterns on top of jQuery. So jQuery 1 and 2, when we were all starting off with it and we weren't really doing the goodness of MVC on the client side, we were writing some pretty horrific code. I'm totally guilty of it. Heavy in the client, doing both my view and my controller all in the same code, creating these crazy huge nested lists. Yes, you could totally do that, and you still can do that with jQuery. But now with these new frameworks, and we're going to actually be talking about them just shortly, you can now use jQuery for really what it's meant for, and now use these nice new models, MVVM and MVC frameworks, on top of jQuery. The only thing I will say is jQuery UI, I think, is somewhat falling out of fashion a little bit. It's still very, very good. It's still being worked on. I know they just did a big update with their mobile version of it, but there is a lot of other options out there. They're being challenged, and that's always good. And when you have choice, everyone kind of steps up their game. So yeah, jQuery, not going anywhere, still amazing. jQuery UI, probably could do some with some revisions on there, but still a very, very good option. Any more questions on that? Awesome. So I'm actually going to just kind of skip through these eye charts here and jump right into a jQuery demo. Now, the majority of you are using jQuery, so show of hands, don't know jQuery at all, never seen it before. So everyone here has done jQuery.
Someone's lying. There at least one brave person.
Come on,
I'm not going to single them out, but I saw one hand.
All right. Because I'm going to show you some basics of jQuery, and it's otherwise going to be very, very boring if you know exactly what I'm doing.
But you know he types fast, so pay attention.
All right, so I'm just going to go in, and I'm going to start by creating a new project here. Come on. All right, and I'm going to choose MVC. And what I'm going to use NuGet that John's been talking about so much to bring jQuery into this project. So we're starting net new. We're not using any of the scaffolds or templates of the existing one. Actually, I'm lying. I totally should have chosen blank. So I'm going to go File, New, Project, create another new project, and this time I'm going to choose Empty. There we go, because I'm a genius this morning. All right, so I'm going to bring up my Package Manager console here, and I'm simply going to go install package jQuery. And what this is going to do is actually going to go pull down the NuGet package. Oh, for those of you who can't see, I should probably zoom in. Install package jQuery. So it's going to bring down jQuery. It's going to create the scripts folder for me over in my Solution Explorer here. And inside of, not the magnifier, but inside of my scripts folder, we're going to see that we got jQuery, we got the minified version of jQuery, we've got the function mapping, and we've got full-on IntelliSense, which makes it nice and easy. So we'll go ahead and we're going to add an HTML page. Let me just zoom out so I can see what I'm doing. Call it index. And all we have to do is just grab this jQuery file, drop it into our head, and we can start coding. So what I'm going to show you is just some really easy document object updates and doing some styling. So
move up the font a bit.
Move up the font. Not that way. Let's do it this way. This way. There we go. Jeez. All right, so we'll add a header, jQuery demo, and we're going to add some divs. Let's add some 3 divs, and each div will have a paragraph, and each paragraph will have some lorem ipsum text. And now, let's start styling this, except we're not going to do it the way we would probably do it by actually hard-coding the styles into the elements. We're going to use jQuery to do that. So first thing is I'm going to create a style block up here, and I'm going to create a title class. And we'll give it a color. And this is kind of interesting here. Notice that I'm in an HTML file, but Visual Studio knows that I'm actually now defining CSS. But it brings me all that IntelliSense and autocomplete for CSS. So I'll just make it blue, and I'll give it a larger font size. And I'll do the same thing. I'm going to create a container class for those divs. Let's set a margin. Again, full autocomplete. You can see here it explains how to do margins, whether you want to do top right, bottom left, or top bottom, left, right. So we'll just go ahead and create some margins, add some padding here as well, and give it a border. And again, you're seeing all the autocomplete. It knows all the different type of border types that you can do. And we'll make that one, I don't know, that color, which I think is orange. Speaking of accessibility, I'm mildly colorblind, which is why I care about things like accessibility. Okay, so I could just go into my H1 and I could give it the title class, but I want to do this through code. So I'm going to go down here, and I'm going to create a script block. And I'm going to introduce you to a couple concepts of jQuery. So as I mentioned, the dollar sign function is kind of the global jQuery function. This converts your either your selector, which is using CSS selectors, or the element into a jQuery element. So I'm going to say, in this case, I'm going to select the document. And we're going to do something that's pretty common. You've probably seen this before. So when the document is ready, as in the DOM's loaded and the browser's indicated, we're good to go, you pass in an anonymous function for it to call. And now we can start manipulating our DOM. So I'm going to do another jQuery selector, and I'm going to select the H1. I'm going to select it by its tag name, which means if I had other H1s in this document, it would update them. And I'm simply going to add a class to it. Again, full IntelliSense, autocomplete, all that goodness. So I'll add a title class to it. And I'll do the same thing for the divs. I'll select my divs, I'm going to add a class, and I'll add the container class to them. So now if I run this, we're going to see that we have, you know, not the prettiest website out there, I'm not going to lie, but at least, you know, the step in the right direction. So let's do a little bit more. So as I mentioned, methods return the elements they worked on, which means we can chain them together. So for example, I can now go, you know, my div selector, then I go dot add class, and then I can go dot, and for example, I can attach an event to it, in this case, the click event. So you can either manually attach your events by using attach event, detach event, add event handler, all this stuff, or you can use the built-in helper methods that jQuery provides, which to me is a lot easier. So the documentation tells me it expects a function handler that takes in an event object. So we'll pass in a function that takes in that. And now we can actually write some code to run when the actual div element is clicked. So to do that, we can actually use e.currentTarget. So currentTarget, this is just part of the JavaScript API. Now this isn't jQuery specific, but e.currentTarget tells me what was clicked on. Because what you'll notice is I'm working on an array of divs. I have three divs on this page. So I need to know which div I just clicked on. So e.currentTarget gives me that. And if I take that element and, again, wrap it in a jQuery call, I now have a jQuery object to work on. And I can do stuff like call dot append. And now I can append some HTML to that element. So I'll do that by doing this. I'm going to say attach a paragraph that says clicked. Go over here, and if I click on my divs, all right, kind of neat, I guess. At least it works. Now what I can do is chain this even further. And now I'm going to get into kind of some like nested territory where this could start getting complicated. So I do generally suggest that you start creating methods of your own. Try to keep the nesting to a minimum, or at least put some comments on there so that the next developer who's reading your code can actually figure out what the heck's going on here. But if I were then to take this paragraph element, and it's an inner HTML as well, and again wrap it in a jQuery call, I can start chaining commands to it. I can, for example, call dot delay, which actually introduces a programmatic delay. It says, do not call the next function, or the next method in this chain until this time has elapsed. So I'm going to go delay 500 milliseconds. Then I use another helper called fade out. And so now when I do this and I click on here, you'll see that it appended it, it delayed 500 seconds, and then it faded out. And you can kind of like do some weird stuff like that. I don't recommend you do this, but this is just an example. So that, in a nutshell, is how you can just get started using selectors, using helper methods, chaining commands together, adding events, so on and so forth. Now, I've just introduced a performance hit into my code. Does anybody know what I just did wrong? What's that?
Time delay?
No, that's valid, definitely, because I've paused things. But no, that's not it. Anybody? This is actually a very, very common pitfall when doing jQuery development. So if I go back here, and let me just do this a lot. I'm going to add a bunch of these clicks things here. What do you think is happening when I call fade out? Well, if I use the inspector, I can see that I got a whole bunch of paragraphs here that just have a display none. I am bloating my DOM. And this is a fairly common problem when you're using events like this and you're not managing your DOM appropriately. What I should be doing is removing this element. So I can actually pass in a function to fade out to be called onComplete, Again, it takes in an event argument. I can then use the current target and remove it from the DOM so that I'm keeping my DOM pure with only elements that I need in it. So just wanted to throw that out there. That's one of the typical issues that you can run into as a jQuery developer. I talked a little bit about the jQuery plugins. I'm not going to live code any of that because that's actually kind of hard and I'll probably screw it up. But I wanted to at least just show you some of the plugins that are available to you. So I just went to jQuery.com and you can see there are like hundreds and thousands of plugins you can use broken down here into various areas. So for example, I can choose, I want an image plugin. I want a nice one. So they've got one that uses Bootstrap. So I'm going to just go ahead and click on that. So that brings me to the plugin page. I can try it out to see if I like it. Yeah, well, that's pretty nice. Okay, great, I like it. I'm going to use it. So I'll go back here and I'll download it and I'll include it into my project and I'll read the documentation to figure out how it works, and it's just that simple. So it really makes it easier to kind of introduce features into your application without you having to code them. So we talked a little bit about jQuery UI as well, which introduces interactions and widgets into your project. It's still being actively worked on. It's still quite good. There are other options, but I'll show you if you want to use jQuery UI, how to do that. Again, using the NuGet package manager. So we'll install package, jQuery UI. I always get this one, helpers. There we go. And we'll choose it for MVC5. So what that's going to do is it's going to resolve the dependency. So it verified that, yep, I got the dependency on jQuery greater than 1.7. And it's going to bring in all these other dependencies as well and set things up for me. So jQuery UI, to include it in your project, if you're starting with an existing project, you have to include two things. One would be, obviously, the JavaScript. So I'll go ahead and put that in here. And since jQuery UI needs jQuery, you'll want to include that first. And the second thing we need to do, we now have a content folder that contains a themes folder. For those of you who don't have perfect vision, there you go. And in there, you'll find all the CSS, and you'll find it broken down by widget type, and you'll find an all-up CSS file, and then there's minified versions of it as well. I'm just going to go ahead and grab that, drop it into my page here. Whoops. Yes, perfect, that worked. Okay, now, there we go. Ooh, that got small. Okay, so now I'm ready to start actually using jQuery UI in my project. It's very, very simple, so let me go down here. And I'm just going to introduce an input element. Type is text. Name is cal for calendar. And again, I'll write some jQuery code here. So we'll select it by its ID. So we're using CSS selector syntax where we know that the hashtag is the ID selector. So we'll go hashtag cal. So we now have our text box. And again, I haven't even compiled yet, so I'm not sure if this is going to work, but can I call? No, I can't call date picker. I'm going to compile now and see if that does it. Compile.date.
Is your reference right?
Yeah, let me just verify I did that right here. Oh, the joys of live demos. I got jQuery UI in here. Yes, I got jQuery.
You may need jQuery UI after jQuery.
Do you? That would totally make sense, of course. Do the exact opposite of what I said. Listen to John. So now we have date picker. And we could pass in options, but we're just going to use the vanilla date picker. Go back to run our sample application here. We have a text box down here. And if I click on that text box, nothing happens because this should be ID. Fail. There we go. Yay. Oh, and because this is on a div and I'm using the global div selector, that totally is working too. Yay. All right, so that's just a really quick example of how you can use jQuery UI. I also mentioned briefly that it's got a very powerful theming engine, so you can just go to jQuery UI, check out the theme roller. It's got a number of gallery-based themes that you can use, whether you want a dark theme, a smooth theme, a light theme. You can choose an existing theme here and click Edit. And that'll bring up the theme editor. It allows you to change your font, corner radius, gradients, and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, the screen's a little small, but you can actually see all the different widgets and elements and glyphs and icons that are included in jQuery UI. And so as you're live editing the theme, if I change, for example, the content from black to pink, I think. Wow. This is why I'm not a designer. But you can do that, and then you can download your theme, pop it into your project, and you're good to go. Okay, so that, in a nutshell, is jQuery. So by the sounds of it, I probably haven't taught you anything you didn't already know, since everyone here seems to use jQuery, so that's great. Are there any questions around jQuery, or anything I've shown, or any just general questions, concerns, comments, online or in person? Perfect. No, get on with it. We're hungry. When's lunch? Fantastic. Next up, I want to talk about single-page applications, which is a bit of a misnomer. It doesn't mean your application can only ever have one page. What it really means is the way that that page interacts with your application. Okay? So in the traditional model, web applications up until fairly recently kind of did this. You made a request to /products. That responded with some HTML. That HTML contained references to CSS, to images, to JavaScript. That resulted in more requests back to your server. Your web server would send those back to your client. Then we started optimizing all this by minifying and caching and bundling and using content distribution networks to make this traditional model faster. Then if I wanted to do an update, I clicked on a product 6, would do that all over again, resend the entire page down, recompile it all, generate the output. And this works. I mean, there's nothing actually wrong with this, and you can build some pretty performant sites doing it this way. One of the key reasons to think about doing single-page application, or at least these very rich interactive pages, is for a number of reasons. Performance-wise, it's very, very good, but also just the time to glass or how quickly you can update the UI changes the user's perception of your application. So, using single-page request style, again, you make a request for the whole page, send back HTML, CSS, images, and JavaScript, and in that JavaScript, it's probably going to be more code, code that knows how to request back to your server to pull down just small snippets of data and update the page itself. And this goes back to you were asking about jQuery and Knockout and MVC and all this. There's a number of frameworks to facilitate this. So now what happens is when you make a request to get product 6, you're making that request probably with AJAX, right? Now you're going to send back some JSON or XML or whatever data format you choose. And your client code is going to consume that data and update your UI as appropriate. So this builds out, this is just the fundamentals of building out these modern single-page style applications. So what are some of the frameworks you can use to facilitate this? You can do it purely with jQuery or any other basic framework for DOM. You can make the AJAX call. You can handle the on success. You can take the success and parse the data from JSON into a JavaScript object. And there you can call a function that updates your UI. And you can couple it all together like that, as we've all probably done, and it will work. It's not going to be ideal. It's not going to be easy to read. It's not going to be easy to get other developers to work on. So we do recommend that, if nothing else, roll your own or use somebody else's. Start thinking about these kind of frameworks that add binding, that add separation of concern, that add design patterns like MVC or MVVM to your client code. I think over the years, we've all learned that we need to add this to our server code. By show of hands, please tell me we're doing this in our server code. Oh, really? Okay, step back. How many of us are actually using these types of models, MVC, MVVM, in our web applications now? Okay, making me feel a little better. For the rest of you who didn't raise your hands, please do. Okay, I won't get into that. But
one important thing to point out, when you say MVC pattern, again, this isn't web forms versus MVC. There's web forms MVP project. There's a lot of different patterns you can use in web forms that separation of concerns and all that, right? Very high quality code. So it's more about the pattern focus. Right?
Yeah, exactly. It's really about the pattern, and this same pattern exists whether you're building native applications for Windows 8 or Windows Phone or iOS or Android. This is just a fundamental programming pattern. It has nothing to do necessarily with web or with .NET. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox. Back to Knockout.js. So Knockout.js is one of these frameworks that can sit on top of jQuery, and it adds some really, really good stuff, such as declarative binding. So it's a little hard to see. Let me see if I can... That totally didn't work. Oh, right. I'm not sure how to zoom on this thing. Or do that.
Can you just...
Yeah, I wonder if I can... Nope.
No. Mark?
Yep.
It's just because on those tight printing, I've been looking at your PowerPoint deck.
along the way. Okay. They are available in the webcam kit.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Thank you very much. So that URL that you see is floating around, you can actually download this right now and follow along. Those of you online, you can do this as well. So in a nutshell, really what this is doing is it adds the data bind attribute to elements and allows you to decoratively declare how you want to bind what attributes or options of that element to what in your model. There we go.
Put that plus sign. Oh, but then when you touch it, it's all over.
Yeah, I'm just...
Oh, here, then you can go...
Probably use the mouse here. Yeah. Okay, so here we're seeing we have a select element. So we're using data-bind, and we're saying bind the options from tickets, choose the options caption to choose, the options text is name, and the value is chosen ticket. On the button, we're data binding. We're saying if it's enabled, call chosen ticket, and click, we reset the ticket. I'm not going to get really into this. The key thing here to take away from this is that Knockout.js kind of extends the JavaScript API and extends jQuery to add declarative binding, to manage automatic UI refreshes. So it's a two-way binding, so it looks at your model. When the value in your model changes, it updates the elements. Or when the value in your elements changes, it updates your model, and it does this through dependency tracking. And it also includes a theming or a templating engine. So you can kind of template out how you want that model to be rendered, and it'll take care of that for you. So this is how, with probably the least amount of code, you can build a very interactive two-way binding application. Now, there's another. There's actually a ton of different frameworks for this, and I can't really recommend which one's best for you to use. I'd suggest trying them all out. Almost each one of these on their website will have some sort of like 5-minute or 10-minute intro where you kind of code along and you try it out for yourself. So I definitely recommend doing so, and then you figure out which one works best for you. AngularJS works a little bit differently. It uses custom tagging attribute and a very powerful directives syntax. Really, what is kind of the key takeaway for AngularJS, I was just having a conversation about this, is it kind of forces you to not have JavaScript code or code in your view. So in this case, in the HTML file or CSHTML file, you have to put that into a directive. And then you bind actions that happen through the two-way binding to these directives. So now you've done a separation of concern, you've declared your binding in the view, and you've declared your actions in the directive, and you can test those independently. So it gives you that strict separation. So AngularJS, another great, great framework, worth checking out. The last one we're going to talk about, and actually the one we're going to go in a little bit more depth on, because this is the one we use in our Geek Quiz demo, is Ember.js. I didn't write the Geek Quiz demo, so I don't know why we chose Ember.js, though in my own learnings, I found it to be a very good framework, kind of really easy to get started. Ember.js does two things. It brings in Ember.js as the MVVM engine, Model View View Model engine, into your application, but also brings in the Handlebars theming and templating engine. So this is, again, separation of two things. It says, here's our MVVM framework, and here's our templating and theming framework. It uses this concept of convention over configuration, so there's certain things it kind of expects that you're going to do. You can go and change those in the config if you want, but it is going to introduce default routes, and it's going to introduce default containers, and it's going to expect that you lay things out a certain way. You can customize all that, of course, but to really just do things rapidly and quickly, you can use the convention over using configuration. And depending on how you set up your application, URLs can be quite important. So we can actually use what we call hashbang or hashtag URLs, where everything after the hash doesn't involve a new request from the browser, but allows you to track navigation back and forth and do deep linking and all this great stuff. So what I'm going to do is let me just stop here for a second. Who here has used any one of these frameworks that I just talked about? Okay, a few. Which one? Ember, Angular? Angular,
Knockout.
Okay, so what I'm going to do now is just kind of do a highlight of a really simple single-page application using Ember.js, and then I'm going to move into doing showing you all the code in the Geek Quiz and kind of explaining how it works, rather than trying to live code the whole entire Geek Quiz UI, which I would just not be able to do. So, again, everything, for at least for me, starts in the Package Manager console here, and I'm going to install package Ember. Sorry, it's probably really annoying. Okay, so we're good. Am I back? There. Whoa. Hey. Okay, we've installed Ember.js. You can see that it also brought in its dependency to Handlebars. Handlebars is that template engine I was talking about. So now we can go ahead and in our... I just created a new project while we were answering questions so you didn't have to watch that for the fifth time today. So I'm going to create a new scripts block here, and I'm going to go into my Solutions Explorer. I'm going to grab the Ember.js file that was included, and I'm going to grab Handlebars that was included and drag those over into our index page. And since Handlebars requires Ember, I'm going to try to get this right this time. Nope. No. Ember requires Handlebars. So, yeah. There we go. Okay. So now we're ready to start creating our application. So as mentioned, Ember is big on convention over configuration. So there's a few things that you need to do to get started with Ember, and nobody can read
this. Could you zoom in?
There we go. Thank you. you're supposed to be helping me out here. Come on. Okay. So first things first, we're going to create a script block, not a style block. Except this time, we're going to set the type as, and again, lovely autocomplete, we're going to set text x-handlebars. All this really does is it tells the browser, do not try to run this, because this is an actual real script. So in here, we are going to start declaring our actual application. So we'll start by adding a header in here called Ember Demo. And the next thing we're going to do is actually declare where we want Ember to update our page, and that's called using an outlet. So what I'm saying is, right here in outlet, when Ember detects a change to the route, this is MVC, so it's based on routing, when it detects that change to the route, here's where I want you to update the view. So let's create a couple of views to put in there, again, using the handlebars syntax. So script text handlebars. This time, I'm going to give it an ID of index. Again, convention over configuration. Ember has a default route for index. So we'll add a second header in here. Wow, that's just not working. H2, huzzah. We'll call this index, and we'll do a paragraph with some lorem ipsum text. And we're going to create another one now. Now, this isn't part of the default routes. We're actually going to have to go and declare this. But we're going to do type again, text handlebars. I need to move down so I can see. And ID equals. We're just going to create an about page. So the idea is we're going to kind of model a single page application where you might have a few different views, one of them being about. So we'll put in our header. And again, we're going to put in a paragraph with just a little bit less of lorem ipsum text. OK. Now, again, part of the convention for over configuration, now we've defined all our scripts, but we need to tell the application in what context do you want to run, in what element. So up at the top here, if we create a div, let me just move up here, if we create a div that has the ID of body container, that's where, by default, Ember.js is going to go in and actually insert all these elements and actually render these handlebar themes. You can change this again in the configuration, but by convention, this is where it expects it to go. So, next thing we need to do is actually create our application. So, we're going to put a script block in here. And for those of you who are sticklers, we'll set type to text JavaScript just to be proper-like. And now we'll declare our application. So, var app equals ember.application.create. And we'll go app. With Ember, I've noticed that I have to close my index file and reopen it once I've added the NuGet package to get my IntelliSense to work. So just bear with me here for a second. My script order again? I can't
see your zoomed out.
Yep, wow. I'm all kinds of not getting script right today. Fantastic. So now we go app.router.map. So this is just syntax you kind of need to learn for creating your routers or your routes and expects an...
So I didn't see because you were zoomed out. What was the thing actually that you needed to change? Was
it loaded? Ember first, then handlebars.
Okay, right.
Yeah, awesome. So we're gonna very, very simply do this dot... Sorry, was there a question? No, okay, sorry. This dot resource, and then you'll see the options here. You pass in the name for your resource, your options, and a callback. So you can specify a callback when that resource becomes active, but we're just very, very simply going to create our about resource. That's it. We've now defined an application that has got two routes, index and about, And it's got two templates. We have an index template and an about template. And we have an outlet where, when the route changes, we're going to render those templates. If I zoom out and zoom in here, we're going to render those templates into outlet. So if I run this, we'll get a because. Let me think about this for a second and look at my notes.
I think the order may have been right.
I think, yeah. Do not listen to me, folks. Just don't. No, okay. Okay. So we have, we can see that we have our Ember demo H1 here. That was part of our root template. Or then we have our index view that was actually rendered in that outlet. But what we don't have is the ability to move between our index view and our about view. So the way we can do that, I mean, actually, I can force it. I can use the URL here and go slash or index hashtag. You can't see this. /about, and we can see that Ember has actually updated the page to view to my about view. But if I want to do that programmatically, like I properly should, I can create a navigation element, and in that navigation element, I can use a couple of nice helpers that are included in this framework. Always with the zoom in. So I've created a nav element, and I'm going to use hash, which is a syntax for calling a helper method. I'm going to go link to index. I'll go call index, and then you need to close that by going close link to, and I need to spell it properly.
Index, you have a quote at the end.
There we go. And now I'm going to do the same for about. So this helper method will actually declare the URLs appropriately and the links needed. If I zoom out here, for index and about, and you'll notice now when I click on index, the view changes, and when I click on about, the view changes, but the page wasn't refreshed. Right? So now I could go off and start doing some really funky stuff. I can make some Ajax calls. I can get my model back. I can do declarative binding and have a whole functional application very, very easily, very, very quickly using Embers and Handlebar. So that's just a really high level, obviously very simplified version of it. But I wanted to show this to you so you can kind of understand the next bit, which is the full-fledged geek quiz demo, and get kind of an understanding of how that actually works. How are we doing for time? I feel like I'm running late.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Five more minutes.
I just want to show you really, really quick the Geek Quiz application. So let me zoom in here, and then we'll let you get to lunch. So again, you've got your body container. This is where the application is going to run. We have our index template that's got sections and divs. This is all just bootstrap stuff where we have a container and a row. And this is where things get interesting. What I didn't show you in my demo, my live coding demo, was binding. So we have a div here, and it's got a class. No, sorry, let me go down a little more. We have a div here, and we're using the bind attribute syntax to bind to the class attribute. We're saying give it the CSS attribute class always, but when our model, our question model, has the property answered set to true, also apply the flip CSS class. And we have this down here as well. This is another div. This is the front div. I'm going to explain how this all works. That, again, is also using the bind attribute to bind to the front class and saying when question.answered is true, add the flip class. So what's great about this is you didn't have to write any code to go and select the element to detect that your model changed to then go and change the class. This is using binding and automatic attribute updating to do that for you. We're also using the handlebar syntax to bind attributes or to bind text to the answer property of the model. We're using the action syntax to bind that to the button to say when the button is clicked, call this action in the controller for this view. So if we scroll down a little bit, we're also going to see, and I know this is all very, very quick, but the idea is just to show you some of the features of the handlebars engine. So here's another helper method, just like link2, it's using the hash to invoke the method. Now we're calling each, so we're saying for each option in our questions.options model, add these buttons. And I want to show you what this looks like before I show you the next bit of code. So this is now a fully functional Geek Quiz demo. In fact, for those of you in the audience, real quick, anybody know when .NET was released?
2002.
Correct. What fictional company did Nancy DeFolio work for? Anybody? Northwind Trading. Correct. Okay, very fun, very fun. Yes, but how did that actually work? So let me scroll down here. We start off by creating our Ember application. This just shows you can change what your root element is easily by changing this selector here. We're declaring our application's model for the question as an Ember object, so that's going to give you all that great binding. And now we're creating our index controller. So this is a little bit more fancy than what we did before with creating routes. Not only were we creating the route, now we're actually starting to scaffold out a controller. So your controller has an init function, your constructor essentially. What we're saying here is call next question. What that will do is it will create a question. It'll use jQuery to make a JSON request to our web API to get the next question, and we'll set that using the set properties method. And if it fails, we just set the question title to, oops, that didn't work. Send answer was that action that we were talking about. We used the bind attribute to bind an action to a function in our controller here to say, here's my question, here's the option that was selected. We used jQuery to disable the button. We use jQuery to post to our web API, posting the question ID and what option was selected. And then we use our controller to look at what was sent back and say, was it answered and was it correct? So you might be wondering, how did we get this cool little animation? Well, this is all using CSS3. It's using perspective and it's using transform and it's using CSS3 animations. Now I'm running a little late and it's actually a quite complicated thing to show and involves a lot of different CSS. So suffice it to say we have two divs. And the front div is currently visible on this plane and the back div is actually rotated to a perspective like this. You can't see it. And when the flip CSS class is applied to the front div, it actually uses perspective and rotate to rotate to 179.5 degrees, then this one becomes visible and rotates this way. Really, really cool. You can download this and check it out. Just to save time, I'm not going to show you that right now. Any quick questions on that before I kind of try to blow through the rest of my slides so we can get you hungry folks some lunch? No. Okay, perfect. Any questions online? Great, perfect. So in summary, we went over a couple of these modern web standards overview, kind of give you a feel for how the different consortiums are working together on the different specifications. We talked about how to build some of these single page applications using different frameworks, and we found that really wonderful website, todomvc.com, to help you decide which framework to use. We can't tell you which is the right one for you. You really should try them out and find the right fit for you. And we built out very quickly the Geek Quiz front end. We used Ember as an local client-side MVC framework. We used Handlebars for building out these templates and for binding attributes to our models. We used jQuery for posting and for retrieving our JSON using our web API. So we've basically now taken everything we've been talking about this morning, and we have a fully functional application.